Hi, and welcome to Musicians Real Talk. I'm your host, Glenn Douglas. Musicians Real Talk is a podcast which serves to provide life stories and information about musicians performing in and around the Washington, Maryland, and Virginia areas. So you understand, musicians, we arrive at the job, we exchange greetings, we perform, we break down, and eventually we go our separate ways. Rarely do we engage in our life stories or share in conceptual devices which contribute to our approach to this thing called music. The Musicians Real Talk podcast aims to fill that void. My guest today is Wes Sugar Biles. Wes is an upright and electric bassist who works mostly in the jazz circles in the DMV area. My conversation with Wes will cover his experiences from Nashville to Boston, his migration to the Washington, D.C. area, and also how he has managed to maintain a professional musical career in Washington, D.C. Everyone, welcome to the podcast, Wes Sugar Biles. Hi, Wes, and welcome to the podcast. Hey, man, I'd like to get started with a question that I like to ask. How did you get into this thing called music?
Well, I don't think there are probably a limited number of musicians that saw themselves as really seeing this was the thing for them. I'm talking about 5, 6, 7, 8 years. We all had interest in football, but at 7, 8, 9 years old, we didn't see ourselves as Gale Sayers.
Right, right.
We like football.
Right.
And there are a few musicians that really forecast their interest from the very beginning as musicians. I didn't necessarily see it that way. I just liked music. And I didn't see myself as Ray Brown or Buster Williams when I was 6, 7 years old. But I like music.
Yeah.
And I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. So I had so much music exposure.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Unlike coming from Birmingham, Alabama, which you might have had cotton exposure, or Jackson, Mississippi. I had so much music, but it was country western music.
Right, right, right.
And I didn't think nothing was wrong with country western music.
Hey, man, it's music.
Now, there was one black radio station in Nashville that played R&B. But that's the radio. But the visual connection to music was country and western. And I had a job. I sold newspapers. And this is what really sold me.
Okay.
I was a paper boy. Originally, I just sold papers on the street. I eventually got a route after I made more money. But one of my spots, my main spots, was in front of the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, snap. Yeah.
So I sold papers to Minnie Pearl, Earl and Lester, Scruggs, the boys that did the Hee Haw thing.
Wow, yeah.
The Beverly Hillbillies thing. I sold papers to them every day. Charlie Pride used to be, and I didn't even know who Charlie Pride was, when he finally became big on the country and western scene.
Yeah.
A black country. I sold papers for 3 or 4 years, even before he was discovered.
Wow.
So every night, I sold papers to these people that knew my name. And they would let me go backstage to listen to the shows.
Well, that's cool, man.
Man, and when I heard these cats play, it wasn't bass players that excited me. It was guitar players and banjo players and steel guitar players. I couldn't imagine how a cat could play steel guitar with a slide.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So when I was in third grade, there was a music program at my elementary school. I had to do this because
yeah,
I was,
you got the bug.
Man, I was, but it wasn't R&B. It wasn't jazz. It wasn't it was country and western music. Because I was amazed at how well these white cats could play.
Right.
This wasn't no Miles Davis. This was white cats could play. And they treated me nicely. Because I was the paper boy. And they all bought their papers then, the Nashville Tennessean, cost 5 cents. And these people, I mean, big names in the country.
Right.
Paper cost 5 cents, they give me a quarter. So that's what intrigued my interest.
Right.
So when a music program came to my elementary school, I ran down there. My first experience with it was, I want to be like them. Now, my mother was a caterer, and she taught at Vanderbilt University. She taught catering services. And when she would go to work, I would beat on her pots and pans when I watched country western stuff.
Right.
And she come home and see some of them nicks in her pans and go, "You lost your mind." So that's how I really got the bug for music.
Right.
But it was country and western. And I didn't see it as white music.
No, it's music, man.
It's music.
It's music.
It's music.
Yeah.
And then after that, I learned about black musicians like D4 Bailey and all these other cats that were in the country and western scene, but on the backside. They wrote a lot of the hits that these white boys making $1 trillion on.
Right. Wow.
But I didn't, because they didn't come through the front door. They came through the back door of the Grand Ole Opry like I had to.
Right.
But the old Grand Ole Opry, which was in West Nashville, not this Opryland shit they got there.
Right.
I sold papers right in front of Grand Ole Opry.
That's cool, man.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
And paper costs a nickel to get a quarter.
Yeah.
I'm talking about 59, 60, 61. I would get 30 papers and I sell them. Before I stopped doing it, I was getting 125 papers every day. And I never brought a paper back home. And these Earl Scruggs, Lester Flatt, Minnie Pearl bought a paper from me every Friday and Saturday.
Oh, that is cool, man.
And they said Wesley. See, I wasn't West then. I was Wesley.
Wesley.
I was Wesley. Wesley, yeah. That's the truth, Glenn.
Oh, that's cool.
That's my exposure.
Right.
That was my exposure.
So what drew you to the bass guitar? To bass?
Okay.
Okay, because I don't want to say bass guitar. Bass guitar and upright bass are two different things.
This is interesting. This is a good story here. My first instrument was drums. Okay. I played drums probably until the fifth grade, second, third, fourth. And my music teacher, I had two teachers. I had a violin teacher. I started playing violin in the third grade.
Okay.
And I had a band teacher that I played drums with. And they all was a rotating thing. The band teacher was Andy Goodrich, who was a legend. And the violin, the string teacher was, what was his name? Damn, it'll come to me in a minute. And what they did was they rotated to different black schools on Wednesday they were here, Thursday they were there, Friday they were there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the band class first, playing drums. Bob Holmes. That was a music. Now Bob Holmes became the lead arranger for Take Six.
Really?
That's right. Wow. Out of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Bob Holmes. Andy Goodrich became a PhD jazz instructor at the University of Maryland.
Wow.
He eventually went to University of Michigan and was head of the jazz program. These were my first teachers. So I played drums. And one day, Andy Goodrich, the band teacher, says to me, he was an alto player, and he was phenomenal. Plus, he had a white mouthpiece on his horn. I thought that was cool. Okay. He said to me, Wes, I think you ought to play alto saxophone. I said, what? I'm a drunk. Now, I'm the, plus I'm his pet. I'm his pet.
Right.
Not only did he come to my school, he would take me to some of the other schools that he taught at to play drums, because they drummers wasn't shit.
Hey, man.
And I mean, he took me to, I would go several schools to play drums. And I think that's the basis for my timing now, right, that I played drums first.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Without a doubt, yeah. I know that enhanced my timing because I played drums first. Right. So I started playing alto saxophone.
I didn't know this.
I played alto for 3 or 4 years and was first chair alto player.
Wow.
Now, when I got to junior high school, it's a new band director who was also a concert director. He had a concert band with violins and stuff. Now, I played violin and was first chair violin.
Okay,
so I'm playing, and I played drums in the band. So the marching band, I played drums. Concert symphony band, I played violin. So one day he comes to me to concert. Don Pullen, who was extraordinary. He's one of these cast that Don Pullen's daddy.
Wow, man.
That was my junior high school.
Dude.
Don Pullen's father was my junior high school band teacher.
Wow.
And he had a pink Cadillac. That was my junior high school orchestra and band teacher. So I'm playing in a concert, in a symphony band, violin, and somebody, we had band boosters. Band booster was somebody that helped the band with uniforms, with money.
Okay,
It was parents, you know.
Important.
Right, that's
important.
Right. That's right. And they would have bake sales to raise money for instruments, because everybody didn't have their own instrument. The school couldn't afford to buy, so this band booster club would raise money to buy instruments for the kids that parents couldn't afford them, and buy uniforms and music and all that other stuff. Wasn't no budget for music then. You know, that wasn't even no budget.
Right, right.
So this one guy, black dude that owned a hardware store, went out and bought a string bass and brought it to the junior high school and gave it to them and said, by the next concert, I want to see somebody playing this. Or else...
It's like,
Wes! So, I mean, man, and I saw the bass sit up on the wall for it. And I just, you know, I saw it, but...
Right.
So finally, after about a couple of months, he came to me and said, Wes, what do you think about playing string bass? I said, you done lost your mind. I don't want to play that.
Right.
I'm the concert master in the city. Why I want to give up first chair to play something I don't know? He said, well, and this is what I learned later on. He saw something like Andy Goodrich saw to get me to play alto saxophone. He needed an alto saxophone player, and he just thought, because of my motivation, I could do it.
Right.
And I
right.
did it.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't think about that then. I just, it was a new it was a new horn, and I liked the way he looked playing it, so I took it. So this Don Pullen's daddy,
right,
said to me, I think you make a good, I said, you done lost your mind. I don't want to play that. Plus, how I'm going to carry it around? He said, this is, then he finally admitted that, well, if I don't find find somebody to play this instrument, this cat ain't gonna give us no more goodies. I said, well, I'm in the eighth grade. And I said, and you didn't talk to grown people. I said, that's your problem. See, you didn't, where I'm from, you didn't say that to a grown person.
No, no, no.
I said, well, that's on you. He said, what you say? So, this is like early in the school year.
Right.
So, it gets to be around, the symphony concert is in March. Right? This is like November. So, he's, December, he says to me, Wes, let me go. I need somebody. For this cat, buying all, you know, good stuff.
Yeah.
For the, he said, I need somebody to play this thing. You can, I said, man, ain't need you. I had no interest in this.
Right.
So he tried several more times to no avail. One day, Glenn, he came to me and said, look, I'm just going to tell you. He said, playing violin, you're all right, but you ain't going to be no first chair in a Boston pot. You know, you're all right.
Okay.
But let me tell you what, if you play bass, you can make money. I said, yeah. He said, bass player. In any given city, there might be 5, 10 first call bass players. There are 3,000 violin players.
I said, yeah.
He said, if you play bass, you can make money. Now, I never thought about making money playing violin. I never thought about making money playing drums. And he said, I said, yeah. I said, well, how am I going? He said, here's a book. He gave me a Belvin Builder's Facebook. He said, and that was like an elementary basement. Mm-hmm. And what we had was a storage room for all the equipment. But when we had rehearsal, they emptied the room with all the equipment. He said, go back. The room is empty. Go back there and practice. And when you're ready to come out, you let me know. But you come out and you play all your scales, all your commands, and you can lead bass clap. I said, violin is trouble clap.
Right.
I said, you can lead. I see. So I said, okay. I went back in the room, and just for like 6 months, no teacher, practice on my own.
Wow, dude.
No teacher.
Dude.
No teacher. Upright bass.
Upright
ain't
bass.
Ain't touched electric bass yet. Plus, electric bass didn't really come out. It was, you know, all the R&B stuff was still being done on upright bass. All that stuff was still being played on upright.
That early
electric
Motown.
Bass, that's right. Didn't that's right. really. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm back there playing every day. Fingers bleeding, Glenn. I had band-aids on my fingers every day from the stress of trying to play this instrument. I mean, blisters, bleeding. Now, to go home and practice, I had to take the string bass home. No case. Gave us a bass, one no case. So my mama bought me a red wagon. And that's how I carried the bass home every day.
That is...
Man, that's the truth, man.
That's a heck of a story, man.
So I play, and so the deal was, when you ready to come out, the test gonna be you play all the scales and every key and chromatics and every key, and that let me know that you ready to do it. I came out about 3 weeks before the concert, played the concert. The guy that donated the bass. I don't forget, Dr. Somebody. He was a doctor at Beharry Hospital where I was born at in Nashville. Was just so elated that to see a bass player, a bass in the band,
right.
He bought the whole band brand new.
Oh,
cool. Marching band.
Oh, man, now, that's cool, dude.
That we had 60 people in the band.
Right.
He bought So the conductor said to me, "I told you, you play bass, you can make money. Look how much money you done made for us." Now, the next year, my ninth grade year, the head sousaphone player in the band moved away. So the same teacher came to me and said, "We need a sousaphone player." We need a sousaphone player.
They gonna milk this thing, man.
Never played sousaphone in my life.
Right.
Tuba, never played it in my life. He said, "Well, if you're gonna play bass choir. Bass trombone, tuba, upright bass.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Learn the choir."
And I said, "That makes sense."
So I went back in that room, same room. And learned sousaphone and played tuba all the way through college.
Man, that's a fascinating story.
That's how I played bass.
Yeah.
Now, this same teacher had a trio that played at the local Holiday Inn. He was a blues piano player.
Okay.
Don Pullen's father.
Right.
One night, I get a call at my house, and it's him. He said, "Wes, let me talk to your mother." So I put my mother on the phone. I knew I hadn't done nothing, so
I got me. There you go.
And he told my mother that his bass player was drunk and couldn't play the guitar. Now I'm in the eighth grade. Will she allow me to come play? Now, I never played a gig in my life. I didn't have no clue of what to play.
Right.
And my mama said, "You done lost your mind. My son can't come in no place where they drinking." But the rule was, if you had an underage musician, on the breaks, you had to go out in the lobby and sit.
Right.
You couldn't stay in the lounge.
Right.
And he explained that to my mother. And my mother said, "Well, if I can come too, then he can come, because the gig paid $10. I'm in the eighth grade.
Right.
I played the gig. Didn't have a clue, but he was telling me what notes to play.
Right.
But I kept that gig out of my dream.
Wow, dude. Oh, God. to drive your bass around.
I didn't have no bass. But from that,
right,
I bought me a bass. Now, I didn't have no electric bass yet.
No, I'm talking about you had something.
Yeah. I bought me a car.
There you go, man. There you go.
Now, and I married playing bass from that accumulation of experience.
Right.
Graduation night, I took my cap and gown off and ran, got in my car to make my gig. That's right. I did.
Yeah.
Girlfriend went with me and everything.
Right.
The graduation night, you know, because graduation is kind of early, like 6 o'clock, graduation was over. I ran in the car and went to my gig. And when I left that gig was when I went to college. And Dr. Pullen said to me, "Now that's enough of this. You get ready for the next. That's enough of playing with me. You get ready for the next."
Yeah.
And I probably would have stayed.
Right.
He said, "Nah, that's it.
Hey, man.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it for this. Get ready for what's next." Right. Now, people knew I played. He said, "Wait and see who called." Shit. Glenn, that's how I got to play. And he said, "You look like this." I said, "How bass players look?" He said, "Look in the mirror."
Hey, man, that's cool.
That's the truth,
cool,
man.
That's cool.
I probably told this story twice in my life.
Wow. Now, you know, people have some folks going to
play.
So that's Wes.
That's how I got to playing bass.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Musicians Real Talk. Please look for part two of my conversation with Wes Sugar Bowles, which will be published soon. Ask that if you have a comment or an idea, please leave it on this platform or on my Facebook page, or you can visit my website at www.glendouglasmusic.com. That's www.glendouglasmusic.com. And remember, music is God's gift to the world, and it is not your invention. Thank you for listening.